Welcome back to another edition of the Weekend Screener podcast. I'm your host, Albert, and today I am joined by Phil, Eric, Sean, and Zach. And again, a reminder, this podcast is not spoiler-free. We are a spoiler-driven podcast. And today we are going to be reviewing the 1998 classic Armageddon, directed by Michael Bay and written by Jonathan Henslow and J.J. Abrams, starring Bruce Willis, Liv Tyler, and Ben Affleck. To start things off, let's get Eric's opinion on what he thought of the movie.
Yeah, so the film started off kind of fast. There was a lot of trying to introduce a ton of characters and a lot of character development, but again, not getting a lot of character development completed because it tried to go too quick. And then they were trying to develop, or they like introduced characters that didn't have anything to do with the movie after like the first 10 minutes, for example, like the guy in the trailer who used his telescope to see the asteroid. So there was a really weird stuff just going on in the first half of the film, but it slowly, slowly won me over to a lot more reasonable movie. Still not a good movie, but like more around that, what would you say, like a 40% on Rotten Tomatoes type movie?
Yeah, I think it got 33% or something like that.
Yeah, so it started off at 20 then.
Yeah, it didn't crush it on Rotten Tomatoes. The audience score, however, was like 73%.
Yeah, of course it is 71%.
All right. Zach, what did you think of this movie?
So it's been quite some years since I've seen this. I always thought of this before rewatching it recently. I always thought of it was one of those really, I don't know if the word campy is a good way to say it, but it's just like so like impossibly ridiculous that I was like, oh, okay, yeah, let's just make this believable, barely, and the rest we can just go with the flow here, just throw out this one wacky idea and see how it goes. Well, after rewatching it for the first time in forever, I still kind of agree. Mostly the absurd story of having these people who aren't even astronauts, aren't trained, they're just mostly drillers or like back end blue collar workers or whatever, and they're just all rounded up by the government, say, oh, so we're gonna put all of our lives in the hands of 14 people that really have nothing to do with NASA or space. Yes, they succeed against the dumbest, most smallest of proportions and odds. I think the CGI and the effects for its time, 22 years back, is actually pretty good still for today. As I saw earlier, that it had a budget of $140 million back in that late 90s, which I'm not sure what that would be with inflation for today. And even though that script was just like, really? We have so many minor characters that have no part in this main plot whatsoever. It's thrown in there sometimes for just a good short-term effect, honestly, whether humor or just get you a little emotional or something else. So I actually did not think this was a bad kind of disaster or whatever a type of film. I still think it's holds up pretty decently.
Okay. Sean, what is your take on Armageddon?
It's a classic Michael Bay movie. I think I lost count of the explosions at like 15, a couple of minutes in. Otherwise, it's a great movie to watch when you're multitasking or watch when you just kind of want to zone out or not have to think about a lot, because you can generally catch up on the storyline or what's going on within a couple of minutes if you start zoning out. It's definitely a good action-y kind of movie. You know, it keeps your attention. It's not necessarily suspenseful, but there's always a lot going on, so it keeps your attention. The CGI was okay, I thought. You know, there were definitely parts of the film that it was a lot better. Like the, I thought the rocket blast off was a lot better compared to a lot of the other movie. But like Zach said, it's over 20 years old. So we're not going to have anywhere near the CGI capabilities that we have now. Otherwise, I think it was definitely a solid movie for its time. And it still holds its weight compared to a lot of other movies today.
Okay. And Phil, what's your opening statement on Armageddon?
Well, as I alluded to before the podcast, I definitely think this movie was funded by the U.S. government for sure. I think the CGI still holds up pretty well. But other than that, it's a typical Michael Bay movie. Lots of explosions, cameras flying all over the place. Hard to tell what's going on sometimes. But just some of the areas I noticed where I think it was definitely a government-funded movie was the portrayal of the Russian character. There's no way they'd make fun of the Russian people. But, of course, the Russian government has a space station, you know, gave him stuff that's fallen apart that he has to fix all the time. And then also the scene in New York City with the asteroids coming down, blowing up, you know, buildings like the Empire State Building, two holes in the World Trade Center, which I guess didn't hold up very well. The cabbie says it looks like Saddam's attacking, which was kind of a theme at that time. You know, they definitely, Saddam was public enemy number one for the United States. I thought the movie was okay. It's okay to watch. It's got some good action scenes. There's really nothing to say about the acting. I mean, it's Ben Affleck. He's there to look pretty. Liv Tyler, she's there to look pretty. And Bruce Willis is there to say a few lines that could be straight out of Die Hard. So that's it.
Cool. Yeah, my take on this film is that it's actually probably aged well, considering upon arrival in the late 90s, it was pretty much universally panned by critics. With that being said, it still has some major flaws, and one being the runtime and the editing. This movie is 2.5 hours. It is way too long. And it is especially way too long with the amount of cuts and edits there are to essentially every sequence and every setup in the film. It's ridiculous. It just becomes too much. At a certain point, your eyes just can't take the fact that you've seen 17 different camera angles in the last 25 seconds. And I don't know if Michael Bay has ever heard of a still camera, but there's essentially no proof on film that he has, because there is not one still shot in this entire movie. Now, when it works from a cinematography perspective, it looks incredible. There are some sequences in this film that if you just distill down to the 5 minutes or 4 minutes or whatever of the editing and cinematography together, it looks amazing. It looks as good as anything made in the late 90s. But if you extrapolate that to 2.5 hours, you're essentially just losing your mind, or you're looking at your phone because you have to essentially look away, or else you're going to get motion sickness or whiplash from how much is going on with the editing. It's just crazy. I can't fault the cinematography at all in this film. The cinematography of the film looks beautiful, and the special effects actually hold up really well. I know they did practical effects for a lot of the stuff, like the spaceship explosions, which actually looked really good. I was actually surprised how well the practical effects held up over time. And really, other than that, I mean, I would say the cinematography is the positive. The negative is the editing and the runtime. This movie should not have been over an hour and a half or an hour and 40. 2 hours and 30 minutes was just unreal. Just an unreal length. I know I texted Eric while he was watching the movie, and I said, hey, when they land on the asteroid, that's not the last 10 or 15 minutes of the movie or the last 30 minutes like you think it would be. It's the last hour and 10 minutes of the movie, which is crazy. It's just way too long. You could distill that whole thing down to 15 minutes easy. So those are kind of my, I guess, initial thoughts on the film. As far as the acting is concerned, I guess if I'm just going to touch on that a little bit, I think the writing is so terrible and it is just comically bad. I honestly don't even understand how J.J. Abrams got another job after this, because I guarantee a 15-year-old high school English student could write a better first draft of a Armageddon script than what this is. This is horrible. So to me, the writing is so bad that I kind of give these performances a pass. When the script is this bad, the actors just have nothing to do.
I'm in agreement there,
So many corny lines. So anyways, from here, that's kind of my initial take on it. We'll open it up to roundtable discussion. I guess since I'm talking about the writing, I mean, what did you guys think overall of the writing?
Yeah, there was some really corny lines in this movie. I mean, there was like one that was like, I forget what they're talking about, but he's like, I'll give you two guesses, but you're only going to need one. And then there was like another one that like, did NASA find oil on Uranus when they were trying to make some joke about Uranus, like a fifth grade student?
Dear Lord.
But again, that's not the actors. Like, it's not the job they're doing. It's not that they're doing a bad job. Those are just the lines they were handed. And some of them were just flat out, like, written by, like, a second grader.
Yeah, it's horrible. There is the whole, oh my God, the whole scene, the whole romance aspect with Liv Tyler and Ben Affleck when they're doing that whole animal cracker thing where he's like narrating a safari expedition from like the point of view of the friggin' animal cracker.
I don't know how I managed that, dude.
I was holding my blanket up to my eyes because I was getting so much secondhand cringe that I almost couldn't watch it. It was so bad.
That secondhand cringe happened so many times in this movie. Like, even the love scene when they were in the airport hangar or whatever, and Bruce walks in on them and, like, decides not to intervene. Like, that whole thing with the music was kind of like watching, like, a Hallmark movie.
Well, it's like, why are you guys banging in a jet turbine? What's... Because weren't they... They were in, like, a jet turbine or some shit.
Not and officially like, banging.
Or whatever. I mean,
could have been better if they were.
Could have. Right? It's like somebody turn on the jet and end this scene.
Ooh. End of the movie right there. Roll the credits.
Darn.
Still would have been an hour and a half.
I found a good quote from, I think it was from Michael Bay. Yeah, it was from Michael Bay. He said, I will apologize for Armageddon, because we had to do the whole movie in 16 weeks. It was a massive undertaking, and that was not fair to the movie. I would redo the entire third act if I could, but the studio literally took the movie away from us. It was terrible. My visual effects supervisor had a nervous breakdown, so I had to be in charge of that. I called James Cameron and asked, "What do you do when you're doing all of the effects yourself?" But the movie did fine. So that might, that doesn't give the poor script an excuse, but that might give a lot of the cuts and just the weird extra fluff, I guess.
Yeah.
Way to throw the visual effects supervisor under the bus.
Well, this is all his movies, though. I mean, what did he do after this, Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, I don't really understand. See, I understand that is a giant problem in Hollywood, that directors kind of get certain films taken out of their hands when it comes to the editing booth. But at the same time, this, like Phil said, this is all of his films. They're all like this. They look good, and they're written by like a freaking 10-year-old.
Less.
I mean, that's younger. His go-to is, you know, if the shot is lacking something, more explosions.
Well, okay, it should be pointed out that originally there were up to 9 writers working on the script, but in the final theatrical cut, only 5 are actually credited.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony Gilroy did a pass at this script, and he wrote, like, Michael Clayton, which is a super good movie. And just seeing his name attached to this was somewhat traumatic for me. Like, I felt terrible that he even, like, was involved.
That's how bad the script is. Yeah, when there's too many writers, too many cooks in the kitchen, you could feel that just watching this.
Hey, you guys are forgetting that Michael Bay wrote The Quiet, or didn't wrote, he produced The Quiet Place and The Purge.
So he threw money at it.
Yeah, good for him. So he had nothing to do with the project and gave people money.
Because it was, didn't, Eric, yeah, he probably did they that didn't to have get explosions, Michael Kranz. Okay?
Explosions of sound.
Remember,
that was probably just to get John Krasinski in 13 hours.
Oh, God.
I do have to say, though, like, when I was watching the film, and this is obviously a product of watching this 20 years after it came out, I thought the CGI was awful, but, like, looking back now on movies from that time, it was actually really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the special effects in this film were actually not terrible. Yeah, I mean, look, they look fake. Of course they do. It's some digital effects in the late 90s. I mean, look at The Phantom Menace, and that came out 2 years later, and those effects are god-awful. So it's the same thing.
As our resident IT guy, I can assure you, Eric, that they were using about 3 potatoes strung together to do the special effects.
That's a rough estimate, yeah.
3 potatoes might be a stretch.
Rough estimate there.
Were they russet or red potatoes?
Oh, they were fingerling potatoes, man. Come on.
That explains it.
Dear God.
Hey, really?
Potato talk.
So why couldn't they just shoot like 500 nukes from Earth at the asteroid? Like, I feel like that would have blown it up. I feel like they didn't have to go to the asteroid to blow it from the inside out if they would have shot like 500 at them.
Well, they explained that, though. I think they said that the exterior is too hard or something.
Well, I mean, Affleck is... dig in. Ben Affleck's literally on the DVD commentary, and he says... And it's like kind of a famous DVD commentary bit. He says, I asked Michael Bay why we couldn't just train astronauts to drill, and he told me to fuck off.
Wow.
Dude, it's got to be the everyman, right? Because the scientists are stupid.
Okay,
dude, pissed me off just because of everything that's happening right now. And I'm not trying to turn this political, but like, I was like, oh, great. Here comes the blue collar guy who knows more than the freaking engineers who have like Harvard degrees.
Yeah, no kidding. Also, Phil, to break down your theory about the surface. So the surface is too strong for a nuke to go in, but it's not too strong for their drill to go in.
Yeah,
that kind of makes they're going. I don't know. They're going really
movie
slow.
Logic. Movie
I'm
logic,
pretty sure the whole idea. Yeah, but the whole idea was, I don't know why I'm explaining this, but Ben Affleck landed the part. Yeah, this is so stupid that I'm explaining something like this in a movie like Armageddon. Ben Affleck, when they landed on a part, his crew, I don't even remember what his name is. That's how much I like this movie. They were on a hard surface. They couldn't drill there. So they had to move. That's why they had certain landing sites, because they had to land on a softer part, I guess, where they could drill. That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, and I remember that part. And technically, the physics would be if there's an explosion in a closed space, it amplifies the explosion. If you have a lot of things that are just hitting the surface, it's going to do a little bit of damage to the surface, but all of the force is going to go out into the open space. So I think in an effort to be at precise. Least partially accurate, even though it's in space, you know, they tried to do drill in one nuke. And on top of that, it wouldn't be a very good movie or it would be a worse movie if every country in the world just launched like 20 nukes each at it. And all of a sudden, you know, they all blew up.
Credits would have been rolling a lot faster.
But, you know, that's how it would play out in real life, right? Like, everyone would be like, oh, we're not launching nukes at us. And then like half of the countries on Earth would start launching nukes at it.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
and then the countries that have laser beams would just laser beam it, and it would be over, done.
Or you just go the Deep Impact route and let it hit.
Yeah, right. Doesn't like everybody die in Deep Impact?
Spoiler. No, remember they ride up to that hill and they sit on top of it and they're the only ones that survive.
Island.
Yeah. I think Frodo rode his bike or something. It was something like that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Started a bike against a tidal wave tsunami that's going thousands of miles per hour.
Yeah, they're on the hill, right? I remember that now.
Yeah, I mean, that movie is kind of stupid, too, but... I mean, there were all these disaster movies. There's Deep Impact, Armageddon, and I think you had Independence Day around the same time, didn't you?
Yeah, all mid to late 90s.
I like how everyone's ecstatic at the end of the movie because, like, they killed the asteroid, but all of Paris was wiped out. And I bet you those people weren't feeling so happy, and they didn't show any of them.
There's another perfect example. The French, they're weak.
Yeah,
kill them
Paris.
Off.
What was it? What was? What else? What was it? Shanghai was also wiped out.
Wait, Phil, is that your actual thought or is that the U.S. point of view?
I think that's, well, no, I'm just messing around, but I think that's the part I fell asleep during.
I'm not going to lie, though, I kind of got a little emotional at the end of the movie. Look, it got me, all right? The whole interplay between freaking Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck at the end. I was like, oh, man, this is the best acted part of this whole friggin' movie.
Yeah, I'm going to cry for the guy that tried to kill me by shooting a shot, 12 gauge at me.
Yeah, look, all right. The tonal, there's no tonal consistency in this movie, all right?
Hey, Phil, did we go see this movie in a drive-in theater at the same time as Attack of the Clones?
No, we saw a really good movie in a drive-in theater. We saw Something About Mary.
No. We saw one where Ben Affleck was in Maryland or something. I don't know.
No, that's the sum of all fears. That'd be about the same time as Attack of the Clones.
Yeah.
So we did see that. Don't see Attack of the Clones at the drive-in.
Don't see it anywhere.
Drive-in.
Oh wow!
Attack of the Clones is one of the worst movies of all.
It is awful,
dude. They're all bad. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's worse, dude. I rewatched Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones recently, and
we got to do a Star Wars episode for sure.
Yeah.
You want to talk about films written by a second grader as far as lines go?
Yeah. George Lucas, his success is predicated on everybody else around him and the fact that he had one good idea.
I love him writing racist stereotype characters, though, as aliens. Like Jar Jar Banks is like totally a freaking
I know.
Rastafarian.
Oh my God. And I love how that they were like giving them shit, but instead it was George Lucas's fault because he couldn't write dialogue for anybody.
Still better than J.J. Abrams, though.
I know. This movie is just terrible as well. But it's so campy, though. I feel like at some point, and just to swing it back to Armageddon, I feel like at some point the writers had to be just like self-aware that this was terrible because there's two huge tropes in this movie, and there's many of them, but there's two that really stuck out for me that like you would only put this in a movie where you knew that this movie sucked and I'm just trying to like have fun with it as a writer. One was when they cut the wire to stop the nuclear bomb and they did the whole classic, oh, is it a red or a blue wire? And then at the last second they cut the blue wire and of course it's the right wire. And then the second thing was when the Russian guy fixes the engine of the ship when they're about to blast off the asteroid, and he fixes it with a freaking wrench. What? I mean, that has to be, you know, the writing at that point, I'm guessing Abrams or whoever just looked at the script and was like, this is dog shit. Let's just have fun with it. Like, who cares?
Yeah, I pretty much felt from once they got into space, that's exactly what it was like.
Can we just talk about the Russian guy for a second? They like found the stereotypical Russian actor.
I wrote down the same thing.
And I think that their direction for him was, okay, be as Russian as you can, and then add some Russian. Go.
It's almost like low-key offensive. But
did they just name him Ivan in the movie? Was his name Ivan?
Was it?
I can't remember.
I don't know.
No, it was Lev.
Well,
also he's from Sweden too, so they didn't even get a guy from Russia.
Well, you didn't think that was a Russian accent, did you, Eric?
No, like I did not. He kind of, actually, if you look at his IMDb photo, he kind of looks like Aaron Rodgers without as much hair.
He plays a Ukrainian in Big Lebowski. Or German. I don't know, whatever the weird guys are.
Hey, all I know is every cell phone manufacturer has to figure out what glass they used on those suits, because those things didn't crack for anything.
Yeah, no shit.
They crashed into an asteroid and didn't crack.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that's going to be the most
movie logic again.
Yeah. That's going to be the most movie logic part of this movie is like when Ben Affleck is literally shooting that stupid warthog or whatever it is, armadillo, through space just to get to the other side of the asteroid while it's like spinning and rotating. I don't have even like a basic knowledge of algebra, but that just cannot be even remotely possible.
I heard they had NASA consultants on this movie, didn't they?
I thought NASA.
No.
it was the interns.
Yeah, Michael Bay probably told them to fuck off too.
Hey, how about the like when they had the nuke controls and they bring it in like a locked box, just like they do in every other movie, and then the red phone pulling out to call the president.
Fantastic.
Of course.
Or a guy from NASA can just override it.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're just playing, you know, nuclear code tag. Oh, wait, now it's off. Now it's back on.
Or that the MP knows how to re-enable it just magically.
Yeah, I wrote down somehow a grounds guy has the ability to kill the bomb.
Might be a good idea to have somebody though that can do that. It'd be like Dr. Strangelove, you know.
They could have used a Dr. Strangelove in this movie. Would have made it even better. To me, that's one of the main issues with this movie, though, that I have, is that it doesn't go all the way, like, 100% into, like, the campiness. Like, it tries to be good from, like, the writing perspective, and it's, like, if they had just fully embraced that this movie essentially was just, like, a Godzilla movie, like, from, like, the quality of writing standpoint, I think it would have been so much better.
That this is where it makes me think of similar events from 7 years ago, where we had two films released very close to each other about the same freaking thing. If you guys recall, Olympus Has Fallen and then White House Down.
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing. And you can easily tie right now. First thing I thought of once I rewatched this, Armageddon and White House Down were pretty much as campy as all could be with terrible writing. And then you can connect Olympus Has Fallen with Deep Impact.
So which one got released first?
Deep Impact did, if we're asking that question.
So yeah. that makes sense then why they wanted Armageddon to release as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah.
What did which one actually did better in the box office?
Armageddon by a long shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure
over 550 million.
Jeez. Dude, that song was everywhere. I remember seeing that movie when I was like, seeing Armageddon when I was like 10. And that freaking Aerosmith song was on the radio like for literally an entire year.
The song probably did half the promotion for it.
Oh, yeah.
They probably put in a crap ton of extra money, probably several million just for that and television. Yep, let's just use a famous band song.
Yeah, I mean, how many people, you know, are sitting there driving around in their cars or listening to something at night, and they're like, oh, yeah, I know that song. That song was there, right? Oh, yeah, I want to go see that. Okay, let's go to the theater this weekend and go see it. Boom, 500 million.
It's all Aerosmith, people.
They use a better Aerosmith song in the movie. Sweet Emotion, in that one scene.
Oh, yeah, they do.
In today's world, we know when asteroids are going to be here like 10 years from now. How come they only had 18 days?
It's actually not 100% true.
Well, I mean, more than 18 days. Come on.
I mean, okay.
They get close calls all the time that like they actually don't really know about.
Well, then we need to improve our space station or our space agency.
Yeah, because we need to worry about a little tiny asteroid that's barely the size of a minivan.
Well, that one that hit Russia like a few years ago wasn't that big, and like it freaking like shattered windows like 100 miles away.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it did a lot of damage.
It doesn't matter. And that's actually another incredibly unrealistic thing. Like all those asteroids or whatever meteorites that were hitting Paris would have absolutely devastated everything.
I mean, they did. Like, it wouldn't have just been Paris. Holes.
The, I mean, like it would just be like everything would have gotten vaporized.
Yep.
And see, though, that's the destruction scenes with the meteorites at the beginning or whatever, the pieces of the asteroid. That was probably the worst looking part of the movie, I think, because it was all CGI. Yeah. Oh yeah. Eddie was Eddie Griffith.
Yeah. I was like, dude, Eddie Griffith. What the hell?
I thought they killed him. I was going to be pissed after that too if they killed him off. Come on.
Oh, thank God. Doesn't he say the Saddam line?
No, it was the cabbie. I don't even know.
It was the cab guy.
He was just like some homeless black guy wandering around New York. Of course. I mean, I don't know if this movie is very timely anymore.
No.
I laughed at the part I really laughed at too was when he was hitting golf balls at the Greenpeace activists. Like, I'm just thinking to myself all the time, okay, this movie's about an asteroid going to destroy Earth, when in reality it's going to be us polluting.
It's so macho. It tries to be so macho blue collar that it's just like,
he's kind of ridiculous. He hits the ball and yells, four.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what you do on a golf course when you're going to hit a ball at somebody.
What else are you going to yell? Five?
Yeah. You're supposed to yell four.
Was this terrible before Independence Day? Or those
this
all
was after? This was after.
This was after.
Okay.
I thought Independence Day came out in like 96.
Yeah.
It was five.
Yeah.
It was five, but yeah. Mid-90s. Some other weird thoughts I had when I was watching it. First thing, early. Whenever I see Jason Isaacs in a movie, I immediately think, oh, wait, this is going to be more serious than I thought. Nope. Of course not. Nope. He's just there, like I said, for short-term effect. And then, God, that narrator. The voice sounded familiar, but then I couldn't put a face to it or a name to it. Turns out it's Charlton Heston.
There was a narrator?
I was just about to ask the same thing.
According to the film, the credits here, narration by Charlton Heston.
What?
So
what did he narrate?
That's how long this movie was. I don't remember. Fucking narrator.
Yeah, all this weird stuff, looking it up.
Owen Wilson was in the film too.
Yeah.
He died.
He did.
Yeah. His glass broke. I don't understand it. Like, how come his glass broke?
Why are you trying to understand?
Something hit it.
Okay, but the Russian guy that was flying around hitting pieces of asteroid while they were hopping over a canyon, nothing hit his glass?
Well, yeah, you're not going to kill the Russian guy.
Yeah, he's funny.
Oh, okay, so in the beginning of the movie, when there's that astronaut out at the space station, the glass, their glass gets broken, and then did you hear them scream? And that's impossible. Like, if it was in space, you wouldn't hear any sound.
Yeah.
Are you taking a tagline from the Alien movie, Eric?
Why? What? What's that?
In space, no one can hear you scream.
They can't. Yeah, like, there's no gravity. Like, there's no sound waves. Look,
because there's no gravity.
I think you're looking
for gravity. Vacuum is not the word you're looking for, Eric.
That's right, though, isn't it?
If you go over every problem with the physics and science in this movie, you'd probably just like lose your mind.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure some physicists probably wrote like a huge paper on why every single point in this movie is wrong.
I think they did. I was actually doing research and there was some people from some PhD college students or whatever wrote a paper in like 2011. Yeah.
but why? I could see doing it for like a movie like, okay, what's that one? Gravity.
I can because worse things to write a thesis on.
But Armageddon, like, obviously it's fake. I think most people watching it realize, this isn't realistic at all.
That's probably why it got less praise than Deep Impact, just because it was barely more scientifically accurate.
From caltech.edu. No, you cannot hear any sounds in near empty regions of space. Sounds travel through the vibration of atoms and molecules in a medium such as air or water. In space, there's no air. Sound has no way to travel.
Yes. I get it. I agreed with you.
Eric, what you were looking for was vacuum, not gravity.
But my point was is that they couldn't hear him scream.
Yes, nobody disagreed with you on that.
Yeah, literally nobody did. I don't know why you brought up research to back that up.
Hey, I got more research for you. There's no way Steve Buscemi could have a mental disorder called space madness or space dementia. A fictional mental disorder mentioned in several works, space madness. Oh, shoot, I lost my source. But anyways, it was really Wikipedia.
Did you have to look that up?
Yeah, and I used Wikipedia as my source.
Oh my god, you just go to space and you go insane. Obviously, it's a lie. It's bullshit.
But every one of his movies, I mean, Pearl Harbor is a war movie, and it's the fakest war movie ever made, probably.
Yeah.
And it's even based on a real event.
Three people that hot are in a love triangle? Give me a break.
Transformers is probably more realistic than this.
Oh god. Well, you gotta remember, Michael Bay, if there ain't explosions in the film, you gotta glorify whatever the hell is gonna be the most appealing aspect about it.
Liv Tyler.
Her acting is amazing.
Are you joking? I hope you guys are joking. I can't tell if you're joking, dude. Like there's some good actors in this movie. I mean, I think Billy Bob Thornton's a good actor. You know?
I mean, yeah, they had good talent. They very much did.
Is he ever outside of that control room? Like, is there one scene with him outside of the control room?
Yeah, when he goes to get him on the out at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
Is he there? He's okay. Won. But like 95% of his scenes are in that control room. Just nothing else. No character development. He's just a guy in a control room.
Yep.
And yeah, fun fact, that probably has a little bit of basis in reality. I know a lot of the engineers and the people that worked at Mission Control and helped design those systems, they worked like 18-hour days, 20-hour days, so that they would know what happens if something fails. They would know exactly how to fix it very quickly so that, you know, the astronauts don't go boom up in space. So
oh, yeah.
The fact that everybody is there all the time probably isn't far off of reality.
Oh, I know. I just wanted to see him go outside and like get a smoke or something. I don't know.
Vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
That is something. I think it's just more to do with like, there's just some really uneven character development. Like Steve Buscemi gets a ton of time, but Harry Stamper's like best friend, Bruce Willis's best friend in the movie or whatever, his second in command. I don't even remember what the guy's name is, but like he's going to see his wife or whatever and like give his kid that space shuttle. Just has like zero character development.
Yeah.
I think it was Will Patton's chick. Yeah, that was his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how do you even know, like, we never even find out, like, why he's not with her or why he doesn't know his kid.
You got to fill the rest in with your imagination just because he's, oh, wait, he might have done bad then, but now he good. He just all good.
The slow motion walk of the astronauts in that hangar. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was it.
Okay.
You can't have an action movie or a Michael Bay film without some sort of slow-mo crew shot.
Weren't they just copying the right stuff?
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many shots of American flags on this that I don't even understand how you could fit that many in a movie.
So AJ started up a company really quick after he got fired from the oil rig.
Maybe he filed the LLC years ago.
I was going to say, does he love drilling for oils that much that he just has a low-key oil drilling rig in his backyard?
Yeah. And also, why does it have to be an LLC?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know accounting. I was just throwing words out there.
Gosh, I forget his name, but the main captain on the main ship, when he was like talking about like when he had the gun to Bruce Willis's head saying like, no, we gotta like let the bomb detonate and we gotta get out of here or whatever. And then Bruce Willis said that he would put his daughter's life, like he swore on his daughter's life that he would drill the hole. And then that's what changed his mind.
wouldn't you believe Bruce Willis if he was telling you something?
But if they didn't place the nuke, his daughter's life would be gone. So like, it just didn't make any sense. I don't get it. I'm sorry.
All right. So let's get our final takes and our final ratings on this glorious picture, Armageddon. Phil, you're up first.
All right. I don't think this is Michael Bay's worst movie. It actually doesn't look too terrible for 1999 or 98, whenever it came out. The acting's pretty bad. The writing's pretty bad, but it's still watchable. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
All right, Eric, what's your rating for this film?
Yeah. So, Rotten Tomatoes gave this one a 36%. And I thought it was about it. Like we were talking before we recorded this podcast, I thought it was around 15% for about the first half of the movie. No character development. It was just kind of a hot pile of dog poop. And then it slowly got a little bit better. Bruce Willis slowly won me over, and it kind of became like a 40% Rotten Tomatoes type movie. So I'll settle in the middle and I'll give it a 3 out of 10. It was not a complete bomb, pun intended.
All right. Sean, what do you think?
I think it is a good, like I said in the beginning, I think it's a good movie that you don't necessarily have to pay a lot of attention to, and you still get 95% of what's going on all the time. You know, it had a lot of good actors in it. You can't blame the acting because the writing was pretty shoddy. I'll still give it a 6 out of 10 just because this is a, I think this is a good film to, if you just want to throw on, you know, if you're zoning out, or you know, maybe you're hungover or something and you need something to do.
All right. Zach, what's your rating?
This is definitely easily digestible popcorn flick. The talent's there. Their lines are just grotesquely terrible for the most part. And the plot, you could basically fill it up in your head with your imagination with what the hell they don't even tell you for some characters. But yeah, it still looks okay. It still is kind of campy, and it's just, the tone is not consistent. But you know what? Just for the heck of it, even though it might be a little too long for the 2.5 hours around there somewhere, it's still decent. Michael Bay, you know, not that many explosions. I've seen more explosions in other Michael Bay films. But yeah, it's not his worst work, honestly. So I'm going to be generous. I think I would give this pretty close to what the audience score says on Rotten Tomatoes. They put it in a 73%, and I would actually be close to that at a 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. And my rating for this film is, I'm just going to jump right into it, a 7.5 out of 10. I actually think this movie aged really well, and it hits kind of a soft spot in my heart because it just kind of has that like magical blend of terrible writing and amazing cinematography that you really don't get anywhere else other than from Michael Bay, really. And especially in this film, to me, is like Michael Bay at the height of his powers. Just especially from cinematography perspective, it just looks amazing. Now, 7.5 is absolutely probably the max I could see anyone giving this movie, and I think it's pretty generous. But I just think the dialogue was so bad that it just had me laughing and cringing that I actually kind of enjoyed it a little bit. And I do think that the final kind of like 20 minutes actually hit a decently emotional chord for me, and I actually enjoyed it. So they kind of brought it home nicely. It's just the biggest flaw with this film is the writing, and the editing is just not great. And the runtime, and to me, the runtime is the real culprit of why this film is bad. This movie should have been an hour and 40, an hour and 30 minutes. It's 2.5 hours. It's way too long. There's so much you could cut out of this movie. But with that being said, as a guilty pleasure, I kind of enjoyed this movie, and I actually kind of had fun watching it. So 7.5 out of 10. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and I hope you all tune in again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Weekend Screeners Podcast. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to be notified of future episodes. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at Weekend Screener. That is at Weekend Screener to interact with the show and get show updates. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Weekend Screeners Podcast.